I will read the 35th verse of the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Transcendental Knowledge. Yajjyatvana punarmoham. Yajjyatvana punarmoham. Evam yasya sipandava. Evam yasya sipandava. Yena bhutanya sheshani. Yena bhutanya sheshani. Drakshyasi atmanyathamai. Drakshyasi atmanyathamai. Drakshyasi atmanyathamai. Yajjyatvana punarmoham. Evam yasyasi pandava. Yena bhutanya sheshani. Drakshyasi atmanyathamai. Yat. Which. Gyatva. Knowing. Na, never. Punaha, again. Moham, to illusion. Evam, like this. Yes, yes, you shall go. Pandava, O son of Pandu. Yena, by which. Bhutani, living entities. Aseshani, all. Drakshyasi, you will see. Atmani,
in the Supreme Soul.
Atha'u,
or in other words,
Mai, in me. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion. Nor by this knowledge you will see, for by this knowledge you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, they are mine. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The result of receiving knowledge from a self-realized soul, or one who knows things as they are, is learning that all living beings are parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The sense of an experience separate from Krishna is called Maya. Ma, not, ya, this. Some think that we have nothing to do with Krishna, but Krishna is only a great historical personality, and that the Absolute is the impersonal Brahman. Factually, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, this impersonal Brahman is the person with thousands of Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of everything. In the Brahma Samhita, it is clearly stated that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. Even the millions of incarnations are only His different expansions. Similarly, the living entities are also expansions of Krishna. The Mayavadi philosophers wrongly think that Krishna loses His own separate existence in many expansions. This thought is material in nature. We have experience in the material world that I think, when fragmentally distributed, loses its own original identity. But the Mayavadi philosophers fail to understand that the Absolute means that 1 plus 1 is equal to 1, and that 1 minus 1 is also equal to 1. This is the case of the Absolute world. For want of sufficient knowledge in the Absolute science, we are now covered with illusion, and therefore we think that we are separate from Krishna. Although we are separated parts of Krishna, we are nevertheless not different from Him. the bodily difference of living entity is Maya, or not actual fact. We are all meant to satisfy Krishna. By Maya alone, Arjuna thought that temporary bodily relationship with his kinsman was more important than his eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna. The whole teaching of the Gita is targeted towards this end, that a living being, as Krishna's eternal servitor, cannot be separated from Krishna, and his sense of being an identity apart from Krishna is called Maya. The living entities, as separate parts and parcels of the Supreme, have purpose to fulfill. Having forgotten that purpose since time immemorial, they are situated in different bodies as men, animals, demigods, etc. Such bodily differences arise from forgetfulness of the transcendental service of the Lord. But when one is engaged in the transcendental service through Krishna consciousness, one becomes at once liberated from this illusion. One can acquire such pure knowledge only from the bona fide spiritual master, and thereby avoid the delusion that the living entity is equal to Krishna. Perfect knowledge is that the Supreme Soul, Krishna, is the supreme shelter for all living entities. And giving up such a shelter, the living entities are deluded by the material energy, imagining themselves to have a separate identity. Thus, under different standards of material identity, they become forgetful of Krishna. When, however, such deluded living entities become situated in Krishna consciousness, it is to be understood that they are on the path of liberation, as confirmed in the Bhagavatam, Muktir Hitvanyatha Rupam Svarupena Vyavastiti. Liberation means to be situated in one's constitutional position as an eternal servitor of Krishna, Krishna consciousness. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki yajñatvāna punarmoham evam yasya sipandava yena bhutanya seśani drakṣasyatmānyathomai. Having obtained real knowledge from the self-realized soul, you will never again fall into such illusion. For by this knowledge you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or, in other words, that they are mine.
The most important word came to my sense in the Anglo stuff, that the word got in spontaneous sense, go to Shakti, to school, and over to go to Shakti.
Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutare Srimati Bhakti Vidanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Goravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatta Deshitarini Vancha Kalpataru Vishcha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnare Bhyo Namo Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Ajanu Lambita Bhujau Kanaka Vadato Sankirtanai Kapitaro Kamalaya Takso Vishwam Baro Dvijavaro Yuga Dharma Pavu Vande Jagat Priyakaro Karunavataro. Hare Krishna. I wanted to speak a little bit tonight about this verse, because this verse sums up the essence of transcendental knowledge, which is the goal of any spiritual pursuit. And at the same time, Krishna makes a very peculiar, very interesting statement in this verse, that this knowledge has a very special characteristic. As soon as you get it, you will never be able to lose it. We know that in the material world, knowledge is very quickly evaporates from our head. Every one of us was passing exams. Usually you keep the knowledge only until the moment the exams is over. The very next second you don't remember anything which was there. You were trying to acquire knowledge through some different processes. But then the knowledge, which is nothing but mere information, evaporates from your memory. And then you may again get it if you use it after some time. But then if you don't use it, it again goes away. However, Krishna here says that yajgyatva na punarmahan evam yasya sipandam. He says, you will never, na punarmahan, again fall into this illusion. If you acquire this knowledge, yajgyatva, then the illusion will never cover you. So this particular point of this verse I wanted to describe a little bit, but to understand why Krishna promises us this and how it is true, how this knowledge never goes away as soon as you get it, I wanted to, in a few words, describe the context of this verse. Basically, this fourth chapter is called Transcendental Knowledge because of this verse. Because of this verse and two verses after that. The rest of the chapter is devoted to karma. Jnana and knowledge, according to Krishna, comes to your heart as a result of a very special experience of a proper action in this material world. And Krishna calls this proper action in a generic term as yajna. He says the proper action which brings about knowledge within your heart is yajna, sacrifice. Unless you are engaged in sacrifice, you will not be able to get knowledge. And Krishna explains that there are many different types of sacrifices. The sacrifice is not just an archaic, outdated ritual which was there thousands of years ago and some crazy Hare Krishnas are doing it still now. Sacrifice is a very general term, and Krishna specifically uses this term explaining that whatever you do, if it's done in proper consciousness, can be the sacrifice. He lists many, many different kinds of sacrifice. He says that yogis who just control their breathing through pranayama, through the process of pranayama, they're doing sacrifice because they kind of control their breathing pattern and they're trying to control their consciousness. He says that those people who renounce the world and live in the monastery as brahmacharis, as renounced people, they're engaged in sacrifice. But then immediately he says, those people who live with the wife doing even bigger sacrifice because it's more difficult. Anyway, he says that there are different kinds of sacrifices, and the sacrifices, Krishna is very liberal. He's not saying just engaged in this sacrifice or that sacrifice. He says all this while summing up this section of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that all these different people, if they know the purpose of sacrifice, if they are Yagyavidho or Yagyavidaha. Yagyavidaha means they are knowers of sacrifice. Or in other words, they are knowing what they are doing, and they are not just ignorant fools who are doing some mechanical process and hoping to achieve something. If they do it in a proper consciousness, then, he says, they obtain a very special result. He explains that basically there are three results of being engaged in sacrifice, in the proper spirit of sacrifice, if you know this. He says, first of all, your ignorance is dispelled. You become, you know, your sufferings or problems in this material world is dispelled. Then he says, you obtain positive wealth in this world. And then he says, Yanti Brahma Sanatana, the third result of being engaged in sacrifice, ultimately at the end of life you go to Brahman. You become spiritual. You spiritualize your existence while being here, and then at the end result, as a logical consequence of whatever you are doing here, you will go to Brahma. So this is three great results of sacrifice which Krishna promises us. The only condition which he puts for us to obtain this result, to dispel the ignorance, to obtain wealth. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, while explaining the 30th verse of this chapter, he says that those people who are engaged in sacrifice, they become materially wealthy, not only spiritually. They become happy in this material life, and then they attain ultimately the spiritual benefit of the sacrifices. The only thing which you have to do, you have to do this properly. It's not that whatever you do, if you call it sacrifice, will be sacrifice and will bring about these great results. Because so many people can make a good case that they're doing sacrifice. I'm sacrificing my life for the sake of my, I don't know, family. Or I am sacrificing my life for the sake of the state. I'm working like an ass, and this is also sacrifice. Krishna doesn't mention the ass sacrifice in this series of verses. You can also make a case that by watching TV you're sacrificing. Because Krishna is, actually he is saying this, that there is a fire. He is explaining, he is taking the metaphor of fire sacrifice. And he is saying basically, whatever you do can be equated or can be kind of explained through this metaphor of fire sacrifice. There is a fire, and this fire symbolizes knowledge, and you put something there, your consciousness, and you know, in this way the sacrifice is going on. So you can make a case that somebody who is watching TV is also doing some sacrifice. He is putting in the fire of TV, he is putting his consciousness. You can make this case. And there is TV sacrifice, there is also, of course, nowadays there is this laptop sacrifice, or computer sacrifice, internet sacrifice. You're sacrificing your consciousness by being immersed into this, entangled into this web. But Krishna specifically, therefore, makes this point that Yajna Vidho, in order to get these results, you have to know what you are doing, what yagya or what sacrifice really means. And therefore he explains the process, how to become Yajna Vidho, how to become the knower or expert of sacrifice. And he says the famous verse, which is actually the main verse in this chapter, because this chapter is called Transcendental Knowledge. And in the previous verse Krishna explains how to get this knowledge. He says, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshyanti pegyanam jnanina tatvadarshana. He explains the process or the method. He explains how to become really, how to really obtain this knowledge. What should be the process? He says, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshyanti pegyanam jnanina tatvadarshana. You should find Guru. You should find, and specifically, Prabhupada starts translating this verse which we read today, having obtained this knowledge from the bona fide guru, you will get this effect that this knowledge will always be with you. So let's dwell for a few minutes, or a few seconds, on the previous verse, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya, what Krishna wants to say to us. He says that you can only obtain knowledge in a true sense of the word from somebody who has two characteristics, who has two basic qualities. These two basic qualities of a guru, we really have to know, because otherwise we will not be able to see who is guru and who is not. He says he is jnani, and jnani basically means somebody who has knowledge of the scriptures. Jnani is somebody who knows the scriptures, who knows the logic of the scriptures, and who can dispel the doubts of his followers. Because so many doubts will be there, and jnani, basically this is explained in another verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, jnani is someone who knows not just the scripture, not the letter of the scripture, but who knows the internal logic, how scriptures are completely logical, who can explain to you the complete system, who can give you the systematic knowledge so that you will have no doubts whatsoever about this process. But this is not enough. He says the guru has to have two characteristics, and this is also confirmed by the verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Tasmat Gurum Prapadyanta Jigyasu Shreya Uttama. The second characteristic of guru is tattva-darshi. It means that not only he should have theoretical knowledge of the scriptures, he has to be tattva-darshi. Literally, this means that he has to see the truth. Not just know the truth, not just learn the truth, not just memorize the truth. Sometimes we think that, you know, we should just memorize something and that's it. Krishna says, no, he has to be tattva-darshi. In other words, he has to see the truth as clearly as I see you. He has to see the truth face to face. And specifically, Krishna does not really specify what kind of truth. The tattva, which he uses here, is a general term. And we know that in Srimad Bhagavatam, the tattva is described in three features. You can know the truth in three features, in Brahma, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So, in any case, you have to know either one of these. Either you have to be knower of impersonal Brahman or the spirit, the all-pervading spirit which is there. You have to know. You have to see. Well, how to see this all-pervading spirit, I don't know. But Krishna says that you have to have real experience that there is this spirit which is pervading everything, which is Brahman and which is the basis of all existence. Or you have to know or see again Paramatma. Yogis, through their process of mystic meditation, the perfection of this process of mystic meditation is when they see Paramatma. Of course, we also see Paramatma. He is there. The Paramatma is the aspect of the Supreme Lord who is also all-pervading, who is in every atom. So yogis, through the meditation, they have to come to the point when they really see the Lord within their hearts. And ultimately Bhagavan you also have to see. Of course, we also see him. He's here. He's listening now, what I'm trying to mumble about this knowledge. But again, the point here is that Krishna specifies that you can only get knowledge from a specific person who has the knowledge of the scriptures and who has experience, who has direct experience of the spiritual reality, who is not just theoretical knower of this reality. And then he says, this is the process. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshyantite gyanam gyanine statva darshana. You have to find this person, and you have to have, really, this is not the main point of this verse, to find such a person. You have to know who is this person, but you also have to have special qualities within your heart, which is humility. Basically what Krishna says, you have to manifest humility in a very strong way in three features. You have to be humble with your body. When you see such person, you just bow down. You just fall down. Because you see somebody who has the direct spiritual experience. And the only proper way to behave towards such a person is to bow down in front of him without any reservations, which is very difficult in itself. Actually, it's very difficult for us to bow down. Yesterday I was in Helsinki, in Finland, and one devotee was explaining to me his experience, how he first time in his life bowed down. He said he came to a church, and he was in a very bad, he had a crisis in his life. He was in a really bad shape, and he came just because of desperation, in despair, he came to the church, and somebody told him, bow down. And he said, this was the most difficult feat in my whole life, you know, I was trying to go there, but I couldn't do this. He said, when finally I did this, I felt some relief, but it was so difficult for me to do it. So the first thing, and Krishna says, this is the first thing. And this is the simplest. Because to bow down or to be humble with the body is a simple thing. You can fake it very easily. And after some time, you know, first time it's difficult, second time it's difficult, the third time is easier, and then you can just do it, boom, 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 no problem. And you forget that this is actually humility. You're kind of faking it. Then he says, pranipatena pariprasnena. Pariprasnena means you ask questions. And that's again humility. Because to ask questions, usually we think we know everything. And it's, you know, to ask questions. We can ask questions, but in a very special, challenging spirit, you know, to show, to expose somebody. You know, this kind of questions, we are very expert in asking. You know, if somebody is speaking and then we want to expose this fool, then we can ask loaded question or something like this. But Krishna says pariprasnena. And pariprasnena means you become so humble in your speech. You really become humble that you really, you know, you ask questions in whole humility. And basically it means if you ask questions, and if you ask questions in the proper spirit, it means that you are ready to follow. That's what humility in speech means. You ask some questions, some burning questions which is inside, and at the same time, within yourself, you make a resolve that if I get the answer to my question, I will have to follow this answer. No matter how unpleasant this answer will be, I will still have to follow it. And then, this can easily be faked. As much as we can fake our bodily humility by expressing us, you know, yeah, I'm so humble. Yeah. Everyone should believe us that we're so humble. And asking questions, you can also fake it. You know, you can just ask questions for the sake of asking questions. But Krishna makes the third condition, which is the most difficult, sevaya. He says, you also have to serve. And this is the austerity for the mind, or the tapasya, or the humility for the mind. Before, Krishna says that if you are engaged, you have to engage yourself completely. And to engage oneself completely means to engage the body, speech, and the mind. And seva, or service, is the humility for the mind. Because if you really serve, if you come and serve, this is, you know, you can't fake it. This means you're humble. If you really come and wash or clean the floor, it means that you're really making some endeavors within your mind to become humble. And Krishna makes this point very strongly. He says, this is the only way to obtain knowledge. Because knowledge comes from up to down. Knowledge is like water. Water never flows up. It doesn't happen, you know. You try to, you know, the water always goes down. So in the same way, knowledge only goes down, and only if somebody is humble. Like it is explained by somebody that Hanuman was listening Bhagavad Gita. When Krishna was explaining Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, Hanuman was there, and Hanuman was in his full feature on the flag of Arjuna. But Hanuman couldn't understand Bhagavad Gita at all. So the question, why? Because he was up there. And therefore he couldn't figure it out. So to get the knowledge, you have to be down. You have to step down, and you have to sit down on the floor in this way. This is the preliminary process of obtaining knowledge. And Krishna makes this point very strongly. He says, the only way to obtain knowledge is to through humility. Because knowledge and pride don't go together. Because the essence, the very essence of knowledge, which Krishna explains in this verse, the very essence of knowledge is the lack of ahankara, of false ego, or pride. If you're proud, you're of course very, you know, you're very high up. Like in Russia, I don't know if there is this in Russia there is a special doll for the children. It's made in a special way that the center of bait is down. And no matter, you know, no matter how much you try to put it down, it always comes up. You know, you put it down, it again comes up. You put it down, there is a, like dough with two balls there. And you put it down, it comes up. Put it down, it comes up. So, in the same way, we are something like this. You know, put it down, it again comes up. Put it down. Never goes really down. For some time you can force yourself, but it goes up again. So, and Krishna says that this pride, which forces you to go up always, which forces you to really be proud, this pride is something which is totally, completely, absolutely contrary to real knowledge. Real knowledge only goes together with humility. Like in Bhagavad Gita itself, Krishna says, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hastini. This compound is very common in Vedic literature, Vidya Vinaya. Vidya means knowledge, and Vinaya means humility. If you have knowledge, you're humble. And if you're humble, it means you have knowledge. You cannot separate these two, because knowledge means humility. And humility means knowledge. It's basically synonymous. Because knowledge means, the spiritual knowledge means understanding of the greatness of God. And how you can obtain this understanding if you're proud? You can't obtain this understanding. So therefore, Krishna very strongly explains this process, how you can obtain this knowledge. You can only obtain this knowledge if you surrender yourself through this process of learning from somebody. And sometimes people try to avoid it by all means. They try to somehow or other to avoid this this process of personal surrender to a living teacher. Like there is this very famous Jiddu Krishnamurti, philosopher in India, who was picked up by Theosophical Society. They wanted to have him as a head. You know, he was a very genius from his childhood. And his main teaching was, you don't need guru. No need of guru. All knowledge is within you. Just, you know, you just get rid of the ignorance which is there, and the knowledge will be revealed. It's already there within your heart. No need to go to somewhere, no need to try to obtain it from somebody. It's already there, just do it. And he has a lot of followers. It's a very pleasing philosophy, you know. No guru. Indirectly, he becomes a guru because he proclaims that no need guru, so everyone follows him. He's still a guru. But at the same time, you maintain your pride. Yes, the knowledge is already within me. But Krishna says, no, you have to remove the pride, because the pride is tantamount of being ignorant. If you're proud, means you don't know anything. It means basically you don't know, you're foolish, because you don't know the truth of life. And therefore, to obtain the knowledge, you have to become humble. Like in Vedas, there are so many stories about this. In Upanishads, there is a story about one disciple of a guru. And the guru told the disciple, I will give you knowledge. I will bestow this knowledge. This knowledge, this transcendental spiritual knowledge, will come to your heart. But I'll give you 200 cows. And when you come with 500 cows, then I will give you knowledge. So first you have to go to pasturing grounds, and you have to, you know, make these cows and take care of these cows. And this is the way how you obtain the knowledge. This is the only way. This is the only process through which the knowledge can be obtained. And very interestingly, Krishna, then he says, he explains, when he said this verse, he explains this verse which we read today. Yaj gyatva napunar mohan evam yasisi pandava. He explains that when you obtain this knowledge in this way, in the proper way, then moha or illusion will never come. The knowledge will never disappear from your from your consciousness. So I will explain this, I will try to explain this. There is also a very interesting story in Mahabharata itself about one person called Yavakrit. This Yavakrit was a son of one sage who was living in the forest. And this Yavakrit was very proud of himself. And he grew up and he became envious, you know, nobody would come to him and he was quite ignorant. So anyway, he decided to get knowledge ultimately. He wasted his young years, he didn't get any knowledge from his father, he didn't get any knowledge from gurus. So he decided to obtain knowledge and he didn't know how to do it. So he went to the bank of the river and he started to perform austerities, tapasya. Heavy, heavy, heavy tapasya. And then Indra came to him and said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I want to obtain knowledge." Indra said, "You can't obtain knowledge in this way. This is ridiculous." He said, No, I will obtain it. I will force the knowledge to come. My tapasya will be so severe. I will fast and ultimately I will obtain the knowledge. The force will come to me." Anyway, next day he comes to the spot where he performs austerities. And he sees an old man, and this old man takes sand in his palms and throws the sand in the river. And this guy Yavakrit, he looks and he's doing it again and again and again. And ultimately he asks, "Dear sir, what are you doing?" He said, I need to go to another bank of the river. And I can't swim and there is no boat here. So I'm trying to get to another bank of the river." He said, "How are you going? This is Ganga. Ganga is a huge river." So he said, "How are you going to go to cross this river?" He said, "I will make a bridge. You know, I'm putting the sand and I will make a bridge and I will go. Don't bother, you know. Get lost." Yavakrit started laughing. He said, "You can't make bridge by throwing sand into me. You can't make bridge." And this person looks at him and says, "If you can obtain knowledge by performing tapasya, why can't I make bridge by throwing the sand? If you think you can do this, why do you think I cannot do this? It's the same." So he said, "If you want to obtain knowledge, go to guru. No matter who you are, how, you know, how big you are, how grown up you are, you know, from which country you are, you go to guru, you become humble, and this way knowledge will come to you. And if you obtain the knowledge through this proper channel, through the proper process, then as Krishna says, yajgyatvana punarmoha, moha or illusion will never come to you. Because illusion has a very special feature. Why Krishna says this, that this illusion will never come to us? Because, and it's really interesting. This is, the whole thing is very interesting. What is illusion? What I really wanted to speak today about is this nature of illusion. The nature of illusion is very special in this world. Because we, as living beings, living entities, have three main propensities. By nature, every living being has three qualities. Sat, it exists. It is there. We know I'm there. And then chit, knowledge, it means that I know that I exist and I know that something else exists around me. And ananda, bliss. So these three propensities are there in every living entity. We want to exist. No matter what, we do want to exist. We want to know. We always want to obtain knowledge. And we want to be blissful. We want to be happy. But the moha illusion which we have, this very special kind of illusion which every living entity has in this material world, is that we are trying to realize these three things, sat, chit, ananda. Existence, knowledge and bliss in matter. This is the problem. This is the only mistake which we do. Desire to exist is not wrong. Desire to be happy, to be blissful, to enjoy is not wrong. Desire to know is not wrong. What is wrong is that we're trying to, in a very illusory, in a very bewildering way, to realize these desires within matter, which is not possible. Because by definition, matter doesn't give you eternal knowledge, doesn't give you eternal bliss, doesn't give you eternality. By definition, the matter has completely different characteristics. And we're trying to be here, and at the same time, to realize this ideal of Satchitananda. And how we do it? Again, in a very foolish way we do it. In a very special way. What we try to do, it's interesting. We try existence. We try to prolong our existence. People are trying to do to prolong our existence in many different ways. Because they feel that I'm eternal, I have to be eternal. So usually what they do in the material world, the most common, the most simple and the most practical way of prolonging their existence is to beget children, right? This is how people think. I will live in my son. I will die, but he will live after me, in my daughter. And then my son will beget another son, and another son. And in this way I will live. So what people do... There is this statement in Upanishads, Eko Bahusyam, that Krishna, when he wanted to enjoy, how he wanted to enjoy? He was one. Can somebody who is one, who is totally alone, enjoy? Not possible. You can try it. Doesn't really work. So, even God has to become many. And Upanishads says that the Lord, because he wanted to enjoy, he becomes many. So in the same way, we do the same thing. You know. To enjoy, we become many. I'm one, you know, so I have to get Srimati Radharani by my left side. Some version of Srimati Radharani. And then Bahusyan, there will be many of us. You know, the children will come. Or people are trying to, again, to extend themselves, to extend their being, through the possessions. This instinct, why people try to, you know, acquire more and more and more? Why do they feel so good about acquiring more? Why people want to become, you know, dictator and to possess so much, you know, they don't really need this. I have an acquaintance of mine. He's a very rich man. Really rich. He once told me that I earn so much money within 1 week that much money is enough for me and for my whole family to live, you know, for so many years, I don't know how many. It's enough. Just 1 week of my work is enough. Bring enough money to exist happily, you know, for me, for all my family. He has 5 children, so, you know. Still, he works like an ass, 20 hours a day. You know, he can't stop doing it. Because he wants more. You know, within 1 week he has enough money to live happily till the rest of his life and the life of his children and grandchildren and grand-grandchildren and God knows how many generations more. You know. Every week he gets something like $10 million. That's his, you know, that's his earning, so to speak. But he wants more and more and more and more. Why? Because in this way he expands himself. And in this way, he feels protected. Everyone wants this protection of existence. We want existence, and we basically want to imitate Vishnu. Because Vishnu means all-pervading. We also want to become all-pervading, you know, through this process. Why people want fame? Because that gives them illusion of being all-pervading Vishnu. Everyone speaks about me. You know, everyone thinks about me. It means that I'm everywhere. You know, if I have so much money, so much possession, it means this is how I extend myself. And this is called moha. You know, this is called the moha, the definition of this very important term of our philosophy, illusion, moha, means that we transform our consciousness. Our consciousness is essentially spiritual. It's spiritual by nature. But we identify our consciousness with matter. And we try to realize our goals or our existence within matter. And this moha is really source of all our miseries. Because no matter how much we try to do it, will it work? It will never work. You can never become eternal in this world. You can never get knowledge in this world. You can never be happy in this world. Because the nature of this world is asat, achit and nirananda. We want to have sat, chit and ananda, but the very nature of matter is asat, achit and nirananda. So what Krishna says, he says very interesting thing. If you become humble, if you really get the spiritual knowledge, which means humility, which means the real understanding of your spirit, if you get it through the proper process of surrendering yourself to the real guru, if this happens, then your moha, your illusion is dispelled. And when the moha or illusion is dispelled, basically you obtain the positive knowledge, because the ignorance doesn't really exist. The darkness doesn't really exist. Can you create darkness as a separate substance? Like now, can you create darkness here? Yeah, like this. This is the only way. The only way to create darkness is to get rid of light. Darkness doesn't exist as a separate substance, it's a lack of light. In the same way, the spiritual knowledge is the light, and the darkness doesn't exist when the spiritual knowledge comes. As soon as the real spiritual knowledge comes, which you obtain through this real process of Tadvidi Pranipatana Parikrishnana Sevaya, Upadikshantite Gyanam Gyanina Statvadarshinaha, it can never go away. Because it's there, the darkness is not there anymore. It's not, you're not covered, your consciousness is not covered by this darkness. As soon as you get it, you get it. You will never be able to forget it. It's an amazing thing, and I think there is a very good case for this verse in the experience of ISKCON or in our spiritual preaching or whatever. We can see that people, and I've seen it again and again and again, people who come in contact with the spiritual knowledge and who really were in the process, in a real process, at least for a short while, who really tried to surrender themselves and through the surrendering process got some sense of spiritual experience, they can never go away from the movement. They try. Sometimes they try very hard. No matter how hard they try, they come back again. Because, as Krishna says, this moha is dispelled. You can never again get your consciousness covered to the same extent that you are so bewildered that you are again trying to realize yourself within the matter. You know it's useless. If you get little experience of this, little glimpse of real spiritual knowledge through this real spiritual practice, then yes, I exist and I'm not separate, I'm a part and parcel of God. Basically what Krishna is explaining here, that when you remove your ahankar, and ahankar, this false notion of separate existence from the Lord, I am independent on the Lord. If you remove this ahankar, which is nothing but ignorance, if you really understand that I am dependent on the Lord, and there is Supreme Lord who is controlling everything, and basically He is controlling me, and we have so much experience of this. So much, you know, if we really become little humble, and humility is the preliminary condition for this, we get immediately this experience that there is force which is behind everything which is happening with me. I am not on my own. I am not alone. I am not really in control of my life. There is some force which is controlling my life in a very intelligent manner. And no matter what I try, you know, I try to do this, I try to do this, still this force is there. There is this will of the Lord which is there. If this knowledge which comes through humility comes to you, it will never go away. You will always feel this connection that the Lord is there somewhere. You know, I saw some people, some devotees, who were trying, because they were trying really, you know, they were trying to go back and enjoy, and they were trying hard to enjoy and enjoy and enjoy. It didn't work. You know, they try to enjoy through matter. It just doesn't have taste. And they try hard. And harder, and harder, and harder. But there's no taste. And they try to squeeze it, and squeeze it, and squeeze it. There's no taste. Because the taste is in spirit. The real taste is in spirit. And if you obtain this taste of eternity, taste of eternal, of being eternal servant of the Lord, of being eternal person, passes of the Lord, of being connected with the Lord, you will never be able to forget this. Narada Muni, he explains this in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He says that if a devotee goes away and he wanders somewhere there, he says he is still not fallen. Because rasagraha, he says, this devotee, he keeps within the taste. And no matter what he tries to do, he still, sooner or later, he will come back. There is no way. Because you cannot run away from Krishna. He's everywhere. Even if you try, you know, how you can run away? You know, even if you go to the North Pole, Krishna is still there. You try to hide yourself, but Krishna is there. He is within your heart. There was this story about one disciple of Srila Prabhupada from America. He was so fed up, he had some bad experiences, so he wanted to run away. But, you know, he was trying to do something, but everyone, somehow or other, you know, everyone was reminding him about Krishna. So he decided he go to Alaska. And Alaska is the, you know, northmost state in America. So he went to Alaska. So first person whom he saw in the airport was a devotee who was distributing Bhagavad Gita. So he was running. You know, the first one who approached him was someone with Bhagavad Gita. He said, oh, they're everywhere. Anyway, he still had some hope. He went to a hotel room. And he locked himself in the hotel room, and he was so happy. He said, finally, now I will just get rid of this, you know, nightmare. And he turned on the TV set, and there was Harinam party on the TV. And then he said, no, that's it, that's useless. I can't run away. So, basically, that's what Krishna says. If you got this little taste, you can't find taste in anything else. Because you only realize, you can only realize your tendency, your innermost tendencies of Satchit and Ananda within spirit. And if you got this experience, no matter how hard you try again to put yourself in the illusion, you understand it's crazy, it's stupid, it does not work. It doesn't work, you know. It just doesn't work. Therefore, Krishna, he very, you know, very encouragingly says here to all of us that if you get this knowledge, and here in this particular verse, by knowledge he means some experience. Therefore, to get the experience, you need to approach somebody who has the same experience, who has the real spiritual experience. If you get this real heart-to-heart spiritual experience, then yajgyatva napunarmohan. Evam, he stresses this again. Evam, never. Yasyasi pandava. In this way, if you get it in this way, evam also means in this way, if you get this in this way, this knowledge, then never moha will come to you. And then what will come to you? Yana bhutanya sheshani drakshasi atmanya komai. He says that you will see everyone as a part and parcel of Krishna. You will not relate to anyone. Not only you see and understand your own spiritual nature, but you will be able to see. You will be able to see everyone as a spirit sparks.
as the souls. And you will be able to relate to everyone, not as a lump of matter whom you want to exploit, but as a spirit soul which eternally belongs to Krishna. And this is the vision which can bring immediately peace and harmony within your heart and make you happy. And this is basically the lesson of this verse which I wanted to explain, that the real spiritual experience, when it comes, it can never be covered again. The only condition of covering, the only thing which can cover it again, is severe offenses which we may commit. Then we may forget the taste. But basically, under normal circumstances, people, when this real knowledge is revealed, when they really get in contact within themselves with the spiritual nature, with their own spiritual nature, when they understand that they are eternal, blissful, and all-knowing spiritual beings, then this knowledge will never be forgotten, can never be forgotten, because this is the real experience of life. Whereas any other knowledge, material knowledge, will evaporate, as I said, immediately, because it has a completely different nature. The material knowledge has the nature of ignorance, but this is the real knowledge which has the nature of light, and this light will always be there. As soon as we get the glimpse of this light from the mouth of self-realized soul, real spiritual master. Okay, I think it's enough for tonight. Is there any questions? Thank you.